You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, we've got to talk about politics. We spoke about it with Viv Govender last week, and we went through the Trump rally and the shooting and everything. And then I saw a Trump rally, so it was the Trump convention, the Republican convention we spoke about. And I saw his first rally since he was shot, and he was back to his old self. I mean, really nasty, really vitriolic. I mean, the lies that he spewed out. He said that when he gets into power, he's going to cut energy bills will immediately on day one be cut by 50%. And I thought, okay. And then he said, When I was in power, inflation was the best that America, maybe even the world, had ever seen. And then he corrected himself and said, okay, maybe not the world, but America. And he just carried on and on with these falsehoods. And I just thought, you've got to be scared, America. If you are listening to this, I mean, his base will always listen to him because they're as bad as he is. But it just shows you, if you tell a lie convincingly enough, you can get away with it. And that's what he does.
And brilliantly as well.
Yes.
Because he's got no conscience at all. You know, when he says it, he doesn't even think about going back and maybe correcting it. And, you know, obviously it falls on the ears of his supporters who I don't want to belittle them, but I don't think they care. You know, for whatever reason, and I'm not a psychologist to try and explain who his supporters are and what they stand for, but I think that's a very scary part of it, is that, you know, this is the man in charge of the nuclear missiles. You know, this is the man who you're hoping will defend the Western civilization against attacks from whoever. You know, I don't know. It just seems America seems to be going backward into an isolationist type, into isolationist policies, protecting themselves from what? You know, America's never been like that, and I just can't come to terms with what they stand for now and what the hell about Ukraine. You know, so what, you know, why should we spend money on a Ukraine? We should spend it at home. It doesn't matter if Russia just invades it, takes over them. And then you think of, well, this is America of the 30s, because America did the same thing in the 1930s when Hitler invaded, Czechoslovakia and Poland, and they didn't care. They didn't want to be involved until they were forced to be involved. And that's scary time. You know, that's scary stuff.
Yeah. So he's becoming more and more dictatorial, actually. And you mentioned Hitler and his running partner, J.D. Vance. And again, we mentioned this last week, referred to him as America's Hitler. And now they're suddenly best friends. Mussolini was the same. Stalin was the same. They all had a certain amount of charisma. But they were all lunatics, David. Yeah. All of them.
Of course. Yeah, without conscience. You know, I don't think they acted on behalf of the people. I think they acted on behalf of themselves. You know, I don't know where I picked up the quote reading this morning. You know, they described it not as two people fighting out, trying to represent their parties and what the party stood for. This was a king challenging somebody who kind of dared challenge him, you know, another party or something. In other words, he didn't see himself as representing a party and what they stood for. I don't know what they stand for, but rather as, you know, the king being challenged by probably some underlings or whatever it is. It was much more articulate than that, and it's pretty I didn't write it down. But you know, that's who he thinks he is. And you can see it with his family as well. You know, they just think, oh, no, we can't have this whole family invading the White House anymore. And I just want a civilized administration. I don't know if we can get that anymore, Lindsay. I don't know.
Well, now that
wherever it is.
Well, it's opened up, of course, now that Mr. Biden has finally listened to reason, and we were talking off air, but I'll say it on air, is that the deterioration has been quite dramatic over the last few weeks. And if you look through a BBC montage of what's happened since the Normandy celebrations, D-Day celebrations, sorry, it's been remarkable. He doesn't know what time of day it is. And the gaffes he's made have been extraordinary. So well done for him going, but has Kamala Harris got long enough? I mean, it's less than 3 months now. Has she got long enough if she is the new candidate, which she will be, of course. Michelle Obama's not going to do it, and Hillary Clinton's not going to do it. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I fear for the result.
I'm still waiting to hear her speak, and still waiting to hear, you know, how she comes across. Look, she was a prosecutor. She held a very good position in California. Mm. I think she's obviously a talented woman to have been considered in the first place, but we've never really seen Kamala Harris. We don't know, you know, we don't know her. I think the party had to stand behind her. They didn't want to go in to the, you know, the convention broken up and fractious, fighting each other. I think they needed to, you know, they needed to stand behind her. And I think she needs a very smart VP, you know, vice president, whoever she does, some young person who can stand against C.D. Vance, you know, J.D. Vance, sorry, you know, who can stand against him and match him in debates, or match him when they come head to head. You know, that the American nation will look to also as perhaps being someone, you know, down the line, someone who will run the Democratic Party. So they've got them. You know, there are quite a few governors there that have been mentioned. So I think they've got the people. It's a matter of recognizing that and putting a team together that can challenge Trump. Maybe not beat him. I don't know. I can't comment on that, but at least give people some hope and something to vote for. So here we go. You know, it's there's going to be a lot of excitement over the next couple of months. Yeah. Listen, she raised $50 million came in.
Yes, as soon as he resigned,
That's a lot of money.
It is a lot.
You know, and it gives you an idea of the support that you'll gain. You know, that people, that was an anti-Trump donation. I don't know if it was pro Kamala. It was an anti-Trump statement. So listen, we'll see. Markets in the meantime are okay. So
yeah, they did. Rallied. Like, yeah, they rallied a little bit. But maybe they're saying, well, now Trump is a definite next president because of the lack of talent that's coming through the Democrat Party. I've never understood this. Can you tell me? Is there some kind of constitutional nicety that I don't know about in America? Why can't Anthony Blinken be the president? Why doesn't he throw his hat in the ring? You know, because he's good. I mean, he's a statesman.
He doesn't want to. Yeah, he's probably a good number two, a good foreign secretary. I don't know whether he's got the charisma. You know, I'd always fancied Bloomberg. You know, Bloomberg was a great mayor of New York. He transformed the whole, you know, the whole city. A lot. He did a lot for New York City. And I thought he was a great administrator. As soon as he came into the political arena, he was just weak. You know, he did it after one debate that was him gone. Mm. He just never had it. And I would imagine Blinken would be like that. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't come across as a man with a lot of aggression, you know, who really wants to run the country.
Okay. Well, anyway, his name hasn't even been mentioned.
He was a good number two. Mm. Yeah.
But it's very important what you say about a strong running partner, a strong vice president to almost,
you know,
guide her.
There's a Shapiro in the race, hey? There's a Shapiro.
There's always a Shapiro in the race.
There's Mr. Josh Shapiro, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I would like it. I would like Vice President Shapiro. It's got a nice ring to it.
Okay, well, let's move on. Now this conversation has suddenly descended. David, the market's bumbling along. It's the middle of July, and towards the end of July now, and holiday season is seriously upon us. And yeah, it's nothing really. There's a few things out of South Africa today that interested me. It's very much dominated by resources updates. Okay, we had Mr. Price. Mr. Price came out, but that's doing nothing. Sasol, 6.5% higher last time I looked. Amplats. They will demerge, as they call it, by next year, and then have a secondary listing on the London Stock Exchange. And the share price doing okay, up over 3%. South 32, the BHP Billiton South Africa spin-off, down 12.25% percent. Yeah. That was a big one. What was behind that? Did you have a look at it?
Yes, they wrote off their nickel and aluminium holdings. They had to make impairments there. There's a story there. You know, I'm struggling with commodities at the moment. Mm. You know, I'm not ready to commit. But I'm watching it carefully, and we comment, you know, when I say we, I talk to Wayne quite often and, you know, go through the workings of this market. But at the moment, it's not doing what we believe it should be doing. It's hard. It's struggling to find a bottom. So now you have the situation where here you are, you know, first of all, Amplats, I'll come on to South 32, but Anglo Platts came out with their numbers.
Yes.
This was a good sign because, first of all, production was up slightly, but the pricing, the PGM basket, came down dramatically. And the results were poor. You know, the results down 24%. But I think a lot of that was in the market. And Anglo Platts found some kind of support. So it didn't end up in territory, in positive territory, although it's given back some of those gains. So, you know, by not selling the shares down was a good sign that, okay, the worst is in the market. But then we get South 32, you know, and South 32, like BHP Billiton before that, you know, wrote off its nickel holdings or clearly marked them down,
yes.
Impaired them. And now this was a big impairment, a huge amount of money, and the market didn't like it. And what bothers me is these are the smart metals, nickel, aluminium, you know, lithium, copper, even copper, Lindsay, is 9,300. Maybe that's a futures price that I was looking at. But this is not the 1,100, you know, 11,000 that was where the market was trading when BHP made the bid for Anglos. Now, reading about copper on the weekend as well, you know, there are great views by the people in the copper industry that there's going to be a deficit over the next few years as more and more is demanded because of growth that we're seeing in various, you know, in digitization, in electric vehicles, in probably housing and everything like that. In the meantime, the others are saying, no, we've been saying this for a long time. You know what I mean? We always find copper. Don't worry. You know, it's crazy. It's not going to do it. So you've got conflicting opinions about copper as well. In the meantime, the price is 9,300.
Yes, so you're quoting the London Metal Exchange price in dollars per ton.
Yes, yes.
The screen I've got in front of me shows copper today down to $4.16 per pound, $4.16 per pound, which is down nearly 2% on the day. So there may be a deficit, but and maybe it's the holiday period, but it's falling another 2%.
That's my worry, you know. I'm saying it's under pressure. Admittedly, there's no growth. Admittedly, the Chinese haven't come out with any stimulus programs, you know, to pick up on the, you know, to help the property market or anything like that. So there's nothing coming from them. But it looks soggy, you know. It doesn't look great.
No.
And my view is okay, and I still stand by it. There's probably less downside than upside. You know, there's more upside, unless you're holding South 32. But you know, it's too early. You know, we don't have to go into it yet. You know, this is one, just stand out, stand by, and, you know, see where it goes. If I look at the chart of Amplats, it's still kind of winding its way in a downward area. You know, it's been sideways for some time, but nothing great. I must look at South 32. I just want to see the chart as we talk.
It'll be destroyed.
You see, yes, but this was picking itself up. It was starting to pick up, you know, from a low of 3,600. I'm giving you the local price.
Yeah.
It had gone all the way up to 5,000, and now it's all the way back to that 3,000 level. No, so not looking good. Where's South 32? I did have it on my screen. Oh, yeah, 3,600. So it was up at
3,681 is actually the price. It's closer to 3,700 BR, but it is still that's still horrible. It's probably broken all sorts of uptrends. If you're a technician,
it's gone back to this very, you know, to its lows, which we saw around about March. So I think the point, Lindsay, it's too early. You know what I mean? You don't have to be the man with your finger in the dike. You know, you don't have to hold up the dam wall. Just stay back.
I think one of the reasons that Anglo American Platinum's share price was doing well today, still doing okay, up 2.3%, but is because they've cut 3,700 jobs, and new capitalist people they get great comfort from people losing their jobs because it simply cuts costs, doesn't it?
And brings misery to the economy.
Precisely.
I see. You know, we're down again. We started off well, and we've suddenly given up quite a few gains. Now the mining markets are starting to fall into negative territory. Bulletin's slightly up, but everything else has come down. I think the South 32 price, you know, had quite a big severe impact on things. Just generally a bit soggy.
Remind us all what's happening to Anglo American PLC. I know that they've got a problem with a coal mine in Australia, and so you can't, a commentator said, you can't sell a burning coal mine. And they're trying to sell their coal assets. They're spinning off Anglo American Platinum. But what are they going to keep, and what will it be? What will Anglo American be in a year's time, do you suppose?
Well, they'll keep Kumba. Yeah. They'll keep Kumba. They've got their copper assets, and they've got some coal operations. But De Beers is the big headache. You know, that's the massive headache because there's no buyers around. No. Nobody wants diamonds. You know, you've got, for whatever reason, they haven't got the control over the diamond operations as they used to have. That's one point. The other point is that you're now getting these manufactured diamonds, which are of gem quality. I don't know what the market's like. You know, so they're not. I don't think they're in a strong position. They're not the Anglos that we used to know.
Goodness me, no.
It's. I was just thinking of an article. You know, if we go over some of those legacy businesses that I grew up with, whether it's Anglos, whether it's Pick and Pay, even like Sasol. And companies like that. There's so many of those have fallen by the wayside. If I plot even Old Mutual, you know, the fall and rise of Mutual, you know, also went to England, got caned, came back now and trying to build them way up. And that there's so many businesses like just have fallen. We can go to America as well and look at General Electric. We can look at IBM. We can look at quite a few. But Anglo's just. It used to have so much power. You know, it was South Africa. And when I look at it today, it's just not a patch on where it used to be.
Yeah, the world has changed, David, and we know why it's changed, because people, investors in particular, are looking elsewhere for their returns, and why not? And they've been proved absolutely right. There are still dinosaurs out there, though, Dave. I'm not saying Wayne is a dinosaur. I just think that he's sort of a little bit blinkered when it comes to the sectors that he looks at. I don't know what his holdings are, but he's still so enthusiastic about South African banks and resources and everything. And he's patient, and eventually he'll be proved right, I hope.
Yeah, probably. Look, they're not badly run businesses. I think we're getting quite enthusiastic about where South Africa is going to go, the economy. It's coming off an incredibly low base. You know, that's the point. So you can get this quick, this quick bounce, but it's sustaining it. And I don't see anything in... If you go through Pick and Pay's accounts, Mr. Price's accounts, which you were referring to, there's still the consumer's still under a lot of pressure. You know, the consumer's hasn't got money. That's still a massive. And Lindsay, rates are 11.5%.
Yeah.
And I was bemoaning this with Simon Brown the other day. Yeah. You know, at 11.75%. No business in South Africa can function if you're paying those kind of interest rates to the bank. Yes, you might get favored rates and you might get a percent or two down. But overall, if you want to buy anything, you want to buy a motor car, a machine, you're paying these massive interest rates. You can't, it just chops your margins. You need rates to be a lot lower. Not down to 10%. They've got to be down to 5-6% around there. I know we've got inflation problems. So I'm saying, there's still going to be a lot of pressure on this economy for some time. The other thing is that you've got a massive unemployment issue here. We're talking massive, you know, and you've got to keep these people fed. And now we want to put, you know, in Fed, you want them to have health care, the same kind of benefits. This economy can't afford that. We've got to grow dramatically. And our policies and our attitudes here are, just don't support it. So I can't get massively excited about South Africa. And we haven't got the resource market. You know, if a sudden China boom comes and resource prices go through the roof, you know, platinum goes up to 2,500 again or 300, and iron ore goes up to 150, 160, all of those, yes, it does give us some kind of an underpin. But at the moment, that's not happening. So, yeah.
Hopefully the US dollar will weaken under Trump, should he get in, or not under Trump, no, under the Fed, because they are going to be cutting rates. They're being a little bit tardy in that regard, but they will eventually cut. The dollar will fall, and the dollar price of these commodities will go up, and there'll be a stimulus in the United States, and hopefully that spreads. You know, China is obviously the one that is the most important when it comes to resources. But yeah, maybe we're being a little bit unkind, David. I don't know. What were you talking about? The banks? You were about to say something.
Well, I'm saying so they very well run.
Yes,
because they don't lend out money, because no one passes the test to be lent to. You know, so they keep their money and they earn money on it. And they do well. I can't fault them, you know. Nor can I fault the Register of Banks and the Reserve Bank for the way that they keep the financial markets here ticking over. They're very, very thorough and very cautious. But we need, you know, you need something more than that. We need a catalyst to get this economy going. And I don't know if we've got it, even with a government and national unity. You know, it's going to take a long time to get it through. So I'm not criticizing any of our businesses. Mr. Price is a well-run retailer. But, you know, if you don't get customers storming in there wanting to buy, there's so much you can do. What can you do? I walked around Rosebank, Lindsay, on Friday morning. And I walked around Sandton the other day as well. And you've got to be impressed. You know, they are beautifully – they are beautiful malls, you know, yes. World class. I'm talking about first world class. I haven't seen anything in the United States to match either of those. You know, you've got the individual shops. Even in Australia, this is far better than Bondi Junction. But you know, you need people to come in, and our shops are beautiful. You know, they're magnificent, but we need consumers. We need people to visit here to buy and so on. So, it's not good enough just having lovely shopping centres.
You know, yeah, so shopping centres are still thriving. I mean, I used to work at Summit Television, yeah. Times Media, and I would regularly walk into the Rosebank shopping centre, and there was a car park outside, and there were some individual shops opposite, restaurants and so forth, and then you would go up the escalators and more shops. Yeah, it was good, but it's probably been upgraded and is obviously still thriving, looks-wise anyway.
Yeah, that's the point. You know, it's look-wise. What I find as well is that when I go and try and buy something, they've never got my size, you know, which also shows that your stock levels are pretty low. There's nothing in the stock room, you know, it's all superficial kind of thing. I always have, from that point of view, if you go into any store in Australia, go to any store in New York, whatever it is, boom, in the back room, come out with your size if it's not on the shelves, or they know exactly where one is. You know, yeah, you can't get it.
Well, you were your size. I mean, you're too thin and fit for these these places, are you? Is that what you're saying? Well, what do you mean your size? What size are you?
Kind of small. Is that?
Yes. Well, South Africans are quite big, aren't they? The target market is slightly more robust than you are, I think.
I've got to go to China or Japan to find my size.
Or a child shop, like Mothercare. David, what were you reading over the weekend? It was too early, I think, too late, rather, to get the Biden resignation into the Economist and the FT, but there still must have been quite a bit of politics.
It was all over, you know, fawning over J.D. Vance and a lot of criticism. You know, if you read the New York Times, I like Paul Krugman.
Yes.
I always enjoy his columns and that because he's just like sober and he Tom Friedman type journalism. They laid into J.D. Vance, you know, mainly because he's a bit of a fake. You know, he doesn't really believe in that. He's just kind of adapting his upbringing now to suit, you know, being an Appalachian, being from a hillbilly, and representing those people. But I think, you know, as Krugman pointed out, they kind of he despised those people for being lazy and not working and not educating themselves. So I think there's a lot of criticism have come out for him. He also, I can't understand, his wife, who is a very beautiful lady, her parents came from India. You know, I think one was an engineer, one in medtech. I don't know exactly qualifications and that. But both of them lectured, I think, in San Diego or taught in San Diego. So she came from a middle-class background of Indian origin. You know, I can't see her being a right-wing conservative. You know, just, yes, she's been married to him. She met him at Yale and that. And I say, this is just not part of your upbringing. You know, it's like Viv. Like me, like, you know, I can't see her suddenly embracing what Trump stands for and so on.
Well, this is the thing about
a bit of fake.
Yeah, this is the thing about Vance. The things he said, if you read his comments, you just have to Google Vance comments Trump, and you'll see he was very, very unpleasant about Trump. You say, one thing he said, if you vote for Trump, you're an idiot. So he's obviously a two-face. He's two-faced. It's as simple as that.
Totally. You don't change those kind of views.
No.
You know, there's nothing that's going to ever make me like Trump. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No matter what he does. Even if he became an Arsenal supporter, it wouldn't change my mind, you know. So.
I read something somewhere about Sir Keir Starmer, the new Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, giving Joe Biden an Arsenal shirt with number 46 on the back because he was the 46th president. I think that tipped Biden over the edge, actually.
I think it did. He is his son's of Arsenal supporter.
Yes, so. Very much so.
Anyway. I don't know enough about him to even comment at this stage. I'm waiting to hear as well and to see how that side develops. But we're in a difficult position. I mean, there's no statesman. I said, who've we got? I don't know.
No.
I don't know anybody that I can really look up to and say, okay, you know, this is the country in which I would like to live and be governed by and whatever. I don't know. No, anyway.
Nor do I. I'm very happy being in boring Netherlands, very well run and everything. Okay, it's got a bit of a right wing leaning to it, but that's just a trend. It's just a fad, and that'll disappear. But at least it works, you know. At least the streets are cleaned every day and all that sort of thing. But and there's no potholes and stuff. Anyway, David, so your reading was pretty limited this weekend.
Yeah. It was all politics. I mean, it was all around the other thing, Lindsay, you know, I've got to express this.
Go on.
Because when we spoke about the, you know, we started to talk about rotation last week and rotation out of tech, you know, into the heavyweight caps, into the Russell 2000, Russell 3000, whatever those indices are.
Yes.
And I said, okay, I'm booked for anything. What stock should I buy? You know, what represents, what can I buy? And when you look at the Russell 2000, I think its entire market cap is not even worth Apple. It's smaller than Apple. Mm. You know, and my problem is that when we do these rotations, you do it kind of in principle. You say, I'm going to buy the Russell 2000. You know, you're not buying stocks in the Russell 2000. You're just buying the index. And I'm going to get out of the NASDAQ or something. So it's more a strategic play or option play. But when you try and translate it, okay, I want to get my clients into small cap America, you know, I can't find any stocks. You know, I don't know what to buy them. But, you know, as I said cynically the other day, you know, a greengrocer in Kansas City, what do I buy?
But that's the question I'm going to put to Viv. I said, at what point, Viv, do you get out of the AI stocks that you're in now and actually allocate a little bit of that money that you've skimmed off the top of your huge profits and put into a startup AI company? There must be those in the Russell 2000. There must be some somewhere, not just Kansas City greengrocers. So, but yeah, I know what you mean. But you can't find them, David.
No, I can't. Mm. I had the same issue. I think I spoke to you about when UBS got quite positive about the UK. And they said, you've got to buy the UK. I said, okay, so which stocks? You know, and I couldn't find more than five, you know, and three of which were probably banks. And that's the point. I can't – the same thing about India. What do you buy in India? You know, which businesses do you buy that you feel comfortable holding? I know you can buy index, but I'm not an index buyer. You know, I'm not going to say I'm buying the Indian index or something. I must know what's driving it underneath it. Yes, there's an economy underneath, but I like to translate it into businesses that I know and understand and that are going to become world class. So, yeah, that was a problem. I dug deep to try and find stocks and wasn't successful. What I do, you know, one thing that did catch my eye was old poor old Tesla. You know, you've got Elon Musk now going out and supporting Trump and Vance, and they're not supporting him because they're supporting internal combustion engines. You know, and can't understand why you should build electric vehicles. You know, when there's so much oil and gas around this, so. Just very funny. Tesla came under a bit of pressure on that.
It was another line from Trump. He said in his speech, he started rambling about electric vehicles, and he said, do you know that they put in 8 charging stations in Texas and it cost $9 billion? No, it didn't. It doesn't cost $9 billion to put 8 charging stations in. And people are cheering and saying, yeah, and we're going to drill, 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 he says, and we're going to get that oil out and pollute the planet. And everyone went into raptures.
I know, but it's such rubbish, man.
I know.
It's just utter rubbish. What is a charging station? It's an electric plug, man.
$9 billion they paid on... That's very strange. Hey, anyway, as sport, David, Wimbledon's over, thank goodness. It's clogged up my BBC channels. I saw a couple of matches and they were quite good. The test series between England and West Indies is horribly mismatched. One, England okay, they're a good team. West Indies are in disarray because all their players play in the shorter form of the game, which I don't mind, but I prefer a 5-day test. And, well, you've got the Olympics coming up. I think the opening ceremony is on Friday. Which also is going to clog up my BBC channels because everything will be covered.
Every channel is going to be a different sport.
Oh, yeah, there'll be synchronized swimming on one channel and ping pong on the other.
Start with swimming.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got to wait a week or so before you can get into athletics. And then you've got gymnastics, and it always starts with swimming and gymnastics. Anyway.
And the football season starts
very elegant, yeah. When is it?
August the 16th is the first game. That's a Friday night. Manchester United kick off the season against somebody, Wolves, I think. And then on the Saturday lunchtime, it's the big one, Ipswich against Liverpool live on on Sky. It's not wonderful at all. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. But for the Ipswich supporters, what a day. You know, what a time.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. You know what? They're just going to relish it. They're just going to love it.
We'll see.
Come from where they've come.
You're talking to one that's been there since 1974 for this team. So it's nearly 50 years I've been a supporter. But I have to say, I just can't decide whether I'm really happy or whether I'm just terrified of getting whacked 3-4-0 every week, even by the likes of Wolves.
That's not going to happen.
You don't think so?
You know that's not going to happen. No, you can see the. You can see the quality they were playing, and you've got a manager who understands, you know, who everybody wants. So and who's staying loyal, you know. So give him a chance.
I will do. Arsenal have signed no one, as far as I can see.
I don't know. Some defender.
Did they?
I don't know whether it's I don't know.
I follow this fellow on X called Fabrizio Romano. He's got 21 million followers, and he comes up with every single rumour, and I scan him every day, and I just can't find any Arsenal quotes or deals that have done. Maybe I'm not looking hard enough, but it's been a slow open season for transfers. Nobody seems to be buying anyone big right now. It doesn't seem to be happening, but it will do, of course, when they panic at the end and the agents say, well, if you want him, you've got a week to get him, and now the price has suddenly gone up by 10 million. That's what they do. Anyway. Okay, David, thank you very much for your time, as always. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.